Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and we go places other talk shows probably wish they could, but they can't, and they won't, and they never shall, so we will. And we are the ever-evolving, ever-mutating, ever-transforming, we're changing, man. Coming up in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a whole new look to our website. All of you folks with Apple product, iPhone, and iPad, right now you can get on-demand media from our website, but you'll be able to access this video cast live streaming for iPad and iPhone in a couple of weeks, along with a whole new look to our website, with a great search engine, with a members login area, with a new look to our archives. Almost 5,000 hours of radio in our archives, the largest of any website in the world. Why don't we get in the Guinness Book of Records?
Yeah, I was going to think about that. How do you do that?
Well, what do you mean the Guinness Book of Records?
Why can't we? Isn't there a Guinness Book of Records as to how many hours of a radio show you have on a website? Or they probably don't give a crap. All right. I don't give a crap, you know.
Yeah, it could be worth money, though, if they find out you're the one with the most. Maybe they'll have you. They might have a doer's ad or something like that.
What do you mean a doer's ad?
Oh, you remember when doers had his name is so-and-so, and he does this, he does this, he does that. His Scotch Doers.
I don't remember that, no.
Yes, it was an ad campaign. And they had, I don't know, let's say Donald Trump. His name is Donald Trump. He's in real estate. He's known for being an idiot. And his Scotch is Doers.
He's known for being an idiot. Great, well, I don't want to do that.
No, I'm trying to be stupid, but...
Yeah, well, I don't know, Margaret, whether they're going to see. His name is Phil Hendry, and he's known for having the largest archive of his radio show, and his Scotch is Doers. First of all, after all these years of drinking Don Julio, no one's going to buy that.
Well, your fans aren't, but people who don't know who you are.
Which that far outweighs people to do.
Sure, okay, all right. Well, whatever Doers wants to pay me. What to do if you win the $550 million Powerball jackpot? What do you do? Well, there are some suggestions here that we have for you, and I know it's going to be a big problem for you, Mr. and Mrs. America, because you're going to want to know what to do. And if you don't know what to do, you better figure it out. Your newfound riches will immediately elevate you from the 99% to the 1%. So, depending upon politically, if you were one of those Occupy Wall Street people and you bought yourself a lottery, and I know people are saying, oh, yeah, sure, right. Hey, I bet you there's at least one or two Occupy Wall Street people that went out and bought a lottery ticket, and all of a sudden you're one of the 1% people. There's nothing wrong with that, and it doesn't mean that you necessarily are opposed to your views that you previously held before the money. But one thing you will be doing, you will be looking to shelter this income. That means not have Uncle Sam tax it. That means keeping your 1% away from the 99%. Excuse me, you mean you have changed? I don't know.
Phil, I don't think that's fair. If I want... I'm one of the 99%. I consider myself...
That's pretty funny.
Why is that funny? I demand... Look at me when I'm talking... Why is that funny?
Because your husband's got money.
So, my husband has money. I don't.
Oh, come on, Margaret. Your husband Frank's wealthy.
I wouldn't say he's wealthy. We're well-to-do. Oh, I see. So that means I can't weigh in on... I can't take part in an Occupy Wall Street...
You can use the outhouse.
She just left the room again.
Yes, that's right.
I think there's something with Margaret. When she gets upset or angry, she has to use the toilet.
Maybe.
Would you close the door, please?
No, I won't. I want to...
Well, what if we walk by and see you in there with your...
Well, then that's your bad luck.
You got that right.
You dirty... As soon as I get my girdle up...
All right, hold on. Also, your newfound riches may immediately elevate you to the 1%. The Street has reached out to our stable of money managers, contributors, and market experts for insight on how to invest a multi-million dollar windfall. Here's what they had to say in their own words. This is Max Courtney of Advanced Investor Technologies. Finding a brokerage house or steward that can handle investments in the hundreds of millions of dollars. He said, find one that isn't publicly traded and has a stellar reputation for customer service and not putting pressure on the customer. That's pretty, meaning, you know, they're not there to try to make a stockholder happy, which means that they're going to be they're not necessarily having you in mind so much as they have the company in mind in terms of making money. So the people they're handling, their clients, will not get that individual treatment. It'll be kind of everybody is thrown into one big kettle and see what makes the best soup, and that's not what you want. An example would be Fidelity Investments. That's the one Harvey said.
Yeah, he said Fidelity something. I don't know if it's an investment. He did say Fidelity.
Okay, well, he says, my suggestion would be Fidelity Investments. They have conveniently located offices that are pleasant to visit, and they'll offer you a generous number of free trades when you open a large enough account. Like, you're going to even care. This is $579 million, man. Like, you're going to care about free trades. I think that that what these guys are doing is they see this as an opportunity to not, they're not pitching a guy with $500 million. They're pitching you and me, the average people. And they're saying, here's what I would do if I were you, Mr. and Mrs. America. This is probably very good advice for anybody, anybody with any income. Begin with, and then so they're telling you how to invest. Begin with stocks or preferred shares of the biggest, best-of-breed U.S. companies. They should pay at least 2% dividend yield. I would suggest they subscribe to a respected investment educational service. $579 million, you're going to worry about the yield you're getting on stocks? You're set up for at least, we figured out, 55 lifetimes. You realize that to retire in America today, they say you need $10 million. $10 million to retire in America today. $10 million in however you want to look at that $10 million. This guy's got $579 million. He's got nothing more to worry about for the rest of his life. So he don't need stocks that he's gonna that are going to yield anything.
So then why are you saying this?
Because these guys are doing this article for the street, and they're saying, here's the angle, let's see what you do if you have $579 million. But the guys they're talking to are guys that are looking for business from regular people. They don't think they're going to get a $500 million client walking through the door. They're talking to you and me. And their advice they're giving is good for anybody. Also invest at least 10% in physical gold. That's interesting. Or use a physical gold publicly traded fund like the Central Gold Trust or the SPDR Gold Shares, and 10% in physical silver or ETFs like physical silver shares.
What's that?
I don't know. But buy silver, buy gold. 10% of what you got, put it into gold and silver. You should consider investing $10 million to $20 million with the 20 best money managers, registered investment advisors, or mutual fund managers you can find based on how they're performing. And if you have stocks in a retirement fund, if you have money in a retirement fund, that's generally, and it's managed for you by a bank or by a retirement company, that's what they're doing anyway. Bill Gross's PIMCO Total Return Fund would be a good example. Now, he says $10 to $20 million. Is what?
By like less than a percent, isn't it?
Well, 10% is 55 million. So 10 to 20 million is 5%. So they're talking about 5% you should invest with these money. What the hell is that? That's nothing. Then you ask your brokerage firm to provide you with an asset allocation strategy or a diversified financial plan and list of the best performing funds for each of the asset classes. I guess if you want to turn your 550, you know, I mean, if you want this money to last generations, like you're one of the Astors, which would be actually kind of a cool thing, and you want this money to grow and you want to turn it into a billion, why not, you know?
I think that that would be what an aggressive young man who won this lottery money would do. You're talking about you, and you would just be sitting on it because you just want to sit on it, right?
Yeah. Why was that make me...
Well, it kind of makes you kind of like a beach bum and everything.
Well, yes, I was going to say, I mean, you just want to sit and spend it and drink it and give large denomination bills to young women, which I don't think is bad necessarily, as long as they're in the age bracket.
All right, Margaret, I heard you. No, actually, I wouldn't want to do I might want to drink it and I might want to spend it. I don't necessarily have to buy or would want to buy women with it.
No, I'm talking about if you had a young woman hanging around the house. And you're getting tired of her hanging around.
And I'm getting, if I have a young woman hanging around, how young are we talking?
Well, for you, young, she'd be like 50.
And you get out of here, please.
50.
Look at this, man. Are these my old glasses?
Yeah, I think so.
So you've got a woman hanging around, and she's a very young woman of 52.
All right, well, Margaret, the jokes, I get it already.
All right. So now you say, I'm getting really bored looking at you, or you don't say that to her, but you say, you give her a $100 bill or two, and you say, baby, you know, get lost, or however you'd say it.
I don't think I'd do that.
Oh, God, Phil, the lies. That's what I have a hard time stomaching, the lies.
I'm not going to say to a woman, hey, baby, get lost.
What are you going to say?
Well, if you give her $100, what are you going to say?
If I give her $100, it's, well...
Never mind. The dirt and filth, it's almost as if you and Bud, both your brains marinated in the same septic tank.
Jeez.
I'm not kidding.
All right, we'll be right back here. All right, enough of the investment advice. Who knows? They've sold these tickets in Arizona and Missouri. Let's see if they found out to who. And let's move on to some other stuff. I'm sick of this. I'm sick and tired of other people earning lots of money. I'm kidding. I'm tired of other people's good news. All right, anyway, we'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. Did I just see something here? I think, Margaret, we're going to find it for you. Can't Get Used to Losing You, is that it?
That's the song that you were talking about by Andy Williams. That's, you weren't talking about that song. Bud was talking about Most Wonderful Time of the Year, which I don't think is a very strong song. But if you want strong, and I know someone requested that I sing tonight, I'm just simply saying, Can't Get Used to Losing You. No matter what I try to do, gonna live my whole life through it,
Is that from Sons of Anarchy or something?
Yeah, I think they play it in Sons of Anarchy.
Can't Get Used to Losing You. I think I saw, it says here, instrumental.
Well, that would work if they have the lyrics. If they have the lyrics. If they don't have the lyrics, no go, no go. Again, no go, no.
I understand, Margaret, God. Well, I don't know. This is the Can't Get Used to Losing You. What, did Coldplay do this too? I don't know. Here it is. Is it just the instrumental? Some jackball playing it on the guitar.
I don't want that, for God's sake.
And that's Can't Get Used to Losing You by English Beat. That's not the same song.
Yeah, it is. It's Can't Get to Losing You. Do, 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 do.
Shut up, man. What do you sing?
I'm singing it better than Candy Williams.
It's not Candy Williams. Do you think it's a woman?
You said Candy Williams.
No, it's Andy Williams. Forget about that song for a second, will you? For God's sake. Let me get over here to this, the winning ticket for... Why am I singing the... I don't want to do the winning ticket of the Powerball. I thought we were all done talking about that. Got the news right there. I don't care, man. I don't give a crap about the winning ticket for the Powerball. I'm done reading about the Powerball ticket. I'm sick and tired of other people's... Well, we might as well. Powerball officials say tickets sold in Arizona and Missouri matched all six numbers. Early Thursday morning, officials confirmed the two winning tickets had been sold. The numbers drawn Wednesday night are 5, 16, 22, 23, 29, and a Powerball of 6. A lottery official said late Wednesday the jackpot increased to $579 million. The cash payout, $379 million. Americans went on a ticket-buying spree in recent days, the big money enticing many people. The tickets were sold, though, in Arizona and Missouri. Among them, the people, was a jobless Chicago man who said his six tickets conjured a pleasant daydream. If he wins, he plans to take care of his church, make big donations to school, and then retire from being unemployed. Well, guess what, pal? You're still unemployed. You bought your ticket in Illinois, and the tickets were sold in Missouri and Arizona.
Hey!
Nice call. Tickets were selling at a rate of 130,000 a minute nationwide, about six times the volume from a week ago. That pushed the jackpot even higher before the Wednesday night drawing, said Chuck Strutt, executive director of the Multi-State Lottery Association. Now, I do know that a lot of the people who win these things have played before. I've often heard them interviewed, and they say, oh, well, you know, I've been purchasing these lottery tickets for quite some time, so I don't think that it's an unusual thing.
Well, but there's also people that win who are not, I wouldn't say wealthy, but they're well off.
There are people that win, yeah, that buy tickets just for the laugh of it, and Just entering this in again. Just for the kicks of it, they don't need the money. And they wind up, not needing the money, but just having fun playing the lottery. And occasionally they'll win, yeah. Now, Margaret, are you ready? Because we have the song here.
Now, let me see. This is Can't Get Used to Losing You. I don't know if this is the right song, but let's just see.
Yeah, it is. It's Andy Williams.
All right, let me see. Yes, this is it. All right, listen. You've got to give this the right feel. Guess there's no use in hanging around. Guess I'll get dressed and do the town. I'll find some crowded avenue. See what I'm doing? Though it will be empty without you. Ooh, ooh.
Oh! I take it. Whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on, hold on.
Why are you stopping me?
What's with the oh?
I'm adding.
Adding your touch, don't you know by now?
Yeah, she always adds her touch.
Your touch.
Phil, don't judge, just enjoy. Don't judge, just enjoy. You understand? Though it will be empty without you, can't get used to, okay, can't get used to use, can't get used to losing you. Oh, I, go rotten hell, I can't.
What's wrong?
It's the wrong key. Loving you. Called up some girl I used to know. I'm not a lesbian, all right?
Yeah, well, what do you think about a girl?
Ow! Wait a minute, man.
He's looking at me like I'm a dyke, all right?
Well, you said call up a girl you used to know.
Those are the lyrics, bud. What do you want her to do?
You can say call up a guy what I used to know.
I don't call guys. They call me when I was single.
Well, I mean, that's great. Have you called Rome about that? Maybe they'll beatify you.
You lousy stink.
Oh, hey! Don't be swinging on people, Margaret.
Then you tell it to watch its mouth.
I'm saying...
Come on, Robert, that's not very polite. All right, so there's your karaoke.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, Margaret, I mean, what do you want me to do?
It was in the wrong key. It was too, I couldn't sing it. It's, would you turn the thing off? I don't like.
It sounds like it was recorded. It sucks or something. I don't know what's wrong with it. Anyway, that's the, Andy Williams is the guy that did Most Wonderful Time of the Year, and that's great, bud. I don't really care, you know. Whether you love that or was your mom wanted to mount Andy Williams or what? Oh, God.
Yeah, this is a bunch of... Here we go. Hold on. Andy Williams was quite sexy. He was a little effeminate, but... Guess there's no use in hanging around. Ooh-hoo. Guess I'll get dressed and do the town. Woo! I'll find some crowded avenue. Woo-woo-woo-woo-woo. It will be empty without you. Ooh, ooh. Can't get used to losing you. I got that. Oh, come on, turn it off. Phil, turn it off.
What's wrong?
I got the voice stuck.
It's what?
The voice is stuck, you idiot.
Your voice is stuck. It happened a couple times. Better get her water.
Give me water. Give me water.
What the hell happened?
You get the keys on, you jackass.
Miss Gray, are you all right?
So I don't look at my right. Then you don't look at my right.
Margaret, are you kidding around?
No, we're not kidding around, you ass. God dang, man. Get the water. Get the water.
Oh, God.
Well, what happened?
I can't sing in that key, you ass. How many times have I told you?
Margaret, I had no idea.
If I get up too high, I'm going to the toilet if I get any calls.
Oh, God. That toilet, man.
Man, that toilet. You ought to have her pay like 3/4 of the water bill. Because of all...
I heard that.
Sorry. Well, he's right.
Boy, that was weird.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. Your voice gets stuck up way up high and everything. You can't do nothing about it. You can't do anything about it, you know?
What happened last time?
The last time she was rehearsing for one of the shows, right, Phil? Right, Phil?
I don't remember this, no.
Well, her voice got stuck. and there's nothing we could do about it. We tried to do everything that we could, but there was nothing we could do about it.
What is it with you and that Goodfellas line, okay? I understand. Great, fine, okay.
You know, she's gone. She's gone. And there's nothing we did to do about it.
Oh, man. All right, thank you. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, my God.
I'm only kidding.
Douchebag.
You're a douchebag.
Phil Hendry.
I don't want to get too heavy, but I got so sad. That little girl that was killed in New Jersey, this child, I don't know if you know the name, but she was a little six-year-old girl that had just the worst life. First of all, the scum that raised her, I don't know whether these were parents, I think they were, chained her to a dresser. They had her chained to a dresser for some reason. So this scum was put into prison, and this child was then placed, I believe, in a foster home. A little six-year-old girl. If you saw the picture of her, you'd just cry. Well, she was found dead a few doors down from her house. They just arrested this piece of crap that did it. And you're just thinking, God, how hard can a kid's life be, man? 6 years old, this poor little kid. And last night I was looking at this story. I said, you know, I get this instinct. I don't think I'm the greatest guy in the world. Believe me when I tell you. But I do. I always have the instinct of wanting to do something. What can we do? How can we? There's a young lady who's a writer. She's a comedy writer, and I was alerted to her plight by some tweets that I saw, and she found out and. When I say young, she's in her late 20s. She found out, and that's a very strange age to find out that you have breast cancer, but that's what she found out, a pretty serious form of breast cancer. And this kid is asking for donations, you know. And I know what everybody's going to say. You know, I know what everyone's going to say. Well, you know, she should have had health, and why doesn't she? You know, she works in the entertainment business, and... Well, I can tell you from experience, just because you work in the entertainment business doesn't mean that you're always working. I mean, the jobs pay, and then they go away, and you're looking for another job, and then the job pays, it goes away, you're looking for another job. There's very few jobs in entertainment, per se, that are 9-to-5 jobs of the kind of money that people are thinking about. If people think of entertainment, they're thinking of multi-million dollar gigs. Those are not gigs that every day you show up 9-to-5 and you get a multi-million dollar check. It's a job you work, you're paid per job. If you're a makeup artist, the same thing. Even people that are paid in not the highest amount of money. If you're like a makeup artist or you're doing electrician or you're one of the people behind the scenes, you're getting paid per job. There's very, very few jobs that you show up to in the entertainment business. If you work for a studio or something where it's a 9-to-5 job and that's what you do. If you're a writer, if you're an actor, if you are anything, if you're one of the tradespeople, if you're makeup, if you're, you know, then you're working per job. So while those jobs may pay well, they don't, if you average all that stuff out, you're not making much more than a lot of people are making. And a lot of people can't afford health insurance for whatever reasons. Maybe you're so young, you don't think to get it. And I'm sure that that's a common mistake. You know, look, I'm so and so years old. I mean, I'm a young person. What possibly could happen? You know, well... So there's all kinds of reasons. What I'm saying is there's a million and one reasons where you could say to me, oh, Phil, you know, what are you feeling so bad about? She's young and she should have and she could have and she would have and all that. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I saw this and I thought this poor kid, she's having to ask for donations for her health care, man. She's got breast cancer and she's, you know, and her credentials as a comedy person, she's been associated with some pretty significant shows, and I'm not mentioning her name, because even if I did know her name, I would feel wrong at this stage mentioning her name to you. I would feel wrong. I want to find out what her full name is and her actual credentials, and then I'll find out whether it's something that, you know, some people just want to keep it in the family. They would just rather solicit the donations by way of Twitter or whatever, and or keep it in the entertainment thing, and would rather it not be broadcast all over the planet Earth. And that may be the case. You know, that's why I'm not saying anything, but I really brought it up for the sole purpose of saying I just felt really bad, you know. And I that's me, you know, I feel bad, you know.
Well, maybe you need to eat better.
Okay.
Well, Phil.
Well, Phil what?
You feel bad about what? You feel bad about the plight of the human race. You feel bad about humanity.
Yes.
You feel, oh, well, that, doesn't that make you a bleeding heart liberal?
Whoa, ho, 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 whoa, ho, 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 ho. Woo-hoo, woo-hoo.
Well, what are you making all of those noises for?
Because you don't know what a bleeding heart liberal is. Somebody says, I feel really bad. How about if you and you and you and you and me, we all donate money?
Yeah, how about?
Yeah, well, the how about turns into, guess what? You are donating money. That's what that is. See, what we have completely lost sight of, and like in the book Atlas Shrugged, okay, which a lot of people, and I probably shouldn't even bring up Atlas Shrugged because there's a lot of people who think, well, that means fascism. No, it doesn't mean fascism. But there's a very good line in there that John Galt, one of the main characters, says. He says, look at the world as it is today. Why are you upset? It's exactly the way you wanted it to be. This is the result. This is the result of all of our very best efforts. See, this is why I say what I say. I always say, the country's doing fine because I recognize there's no such thing as an America that we're all going to go, ooh, it's just great for everybody. It's the very nature of our democracy and the nature of us as people, we're not all going to agree. When we start talking in these apocalyptic terms about, oh, the end is near, we are generally talking that way when some large event has knocked us for a loop, like, for instance, the meltdown of 2008. Oh, my God. The 9/11 attacks. Oh, my God. I always hear the apocalyptic stuff when that happens. When a particularly nasty recession happens. Oh, God. And that is as it always is. That's America. Those are Americans. We have this, there's a few of us that really panic, man. And they're very vocal. I love those people because after things right themselves and after we get to a pretty decent level, you always like to revisit those people and say, so how are you feeling now about America? And they're always still doom and gloom. So you're never going to make them happy. But I'm not talking about anything other than I feel bad for this girl, and I am not going to tell you or you or you or you or anybody else that she has to be taken care of. Now,
yeah, so why you say about health care?
Hold on. I'm looking at the whole ball of wax. I'm looking at the whole big picture. What helps my country survive? I'll give an example. As long as we're talking about Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand was raised by a successful father and mother. Her father was a pharmacist. And he was a very good pharmacist. And he provided for his family. And one of the things that drove Ayn Rand and that informed her life was the fact that after the Bolshevik Revolution, because she was born in Russia, her father lost his business. It was appropriated by the government. And she said, and rightfully so, she said, look at this, successful people are punished. And you hear a lot of people taking that line that Ayn Rand wrote about her family, about her father, and they say, successful people are punished. But they never tell you the other side of the story in Russia. And I don't know why it is. I understand that Ayn Rand, her father, had his business taken from him. And that's horrible. Horrible. And it's one of the reasons why the Bolshevik Revolution failed. It was a failure from the gate. And the only way they could keep it going was through terror, was through pogroms, purges, kangaroo trials, people disappearing. It was horrible. But there's another side to the story that they don't want to tell you about. And they don't tell you about the fact that Ayn Rand's father was a successful pharmacist in a czarist regime, a czarist-controlled country. It was an authoritarian, autocratic, undemocratic, dictatorship, where Ayn Rand's father happened to be flourishing, and where, conversely, there were bodies in the streets from starvation. I'm not exaggerating, people. There were dead bodies in the streets from starvation. Now, how do I apply that to America? Ayn Rand came to the United States, and she said, look at the United States. What a great country. What a great country. It is a great country. It's a country where you can fulfill your dreams. Well, she very quickly became disillusioned in part, not 100%, but in part, because she saw what happened after the Depression. She saw the Roosevelt New Deal. She saw the necessary socialized policies of the United States during World War II, because we had government and we had private business cooperating in creating what we needed for the war effort. And by 1946-47, she started on Atlas Shrugged, which was basically this. We are creating a collectivist society. Okay, fine. But Ayn Rand, once again, as an immigrant, she suffered from the problems that most immigrants suffer from, which is she didn't know, God, excuse my French, she doesn't know a darn thing about our history. See, we had dead bodies in the streets. America, even though it was a great country, and it is a great country, and I love this country, I would gladly give my life for this country.
Really?
Yes. Yes. But let me just put it to you this way. We had recessions in this country in the 19th century that meant people starved to death. They were dying. People were dead in the street. People were out of their homes, not living in a shelter. They weren't getting anything from Salvation Army. They didn't go down to the food bank because there wasn't any food bank. There might have been a church here or there, but for the most part, there are people with no food. They were begging door to door. That was America. That wasn't Russia. That was democratic America. Do I indict my country as an evil place? No, because it was a democratic country. America always has been looking forward and trying to get better and trying to move ahead and trying to create the best possible place for people to live in. That's what the goal of society has always been. The goal of society has never, ever been, let's make sure that individual people pursue their dreams. Are you kidding me? When a man first collected into villages and towns, it was to gain order. When we first began to band together, it was so that we would have some order, so there wasn't chaos, so there wasn't rape and murder and pillage and looting. That's what we were looking at. We formed townships and clans and tribes to protect ourselves. Nobody was sitting there going, I'd love to write a poem, and I don't have quite the right place.
I think you're making it sound gay.
What? But that, nobody was talking about that back in the day. We were talking about how the hell do we protect our wives and our children from the animals and from the roving bands of hunter-warrior-gatherers who are, you know... That's why society was formed, not so we could pursue our dreams. Pursuing our dreams became a byproduct of the sweat and the labor of people manning the gates against the barbarian. Pursuing our dreams, pursuing the Ayn Rand dream, only became possible when we were collected into a unit, into a village, into a tribe, and we had people with guns and knives stationed at the gates of the village and saying, you're not going to come in here and rape our wives and daughters. You're not going to trample our crops. You're not going to steal our grain. You're not going to kill our domesticated, our cattle and our pigs and our sheep. You're not going to rob us. This was a security move. This wasn't about... And the individual man, you see. So when you start to talk about Ayn Rand, you got to get everything straight, baby, and you got to have it in context. You got to understand why we even live together in the first place. You can go pursue your dreams if you want. You could do it back then.
You can't pursue your dreams now because you'll go out, and where are you going to live?
Well, where were you going to live back then?
Yeah, back then, though, you could go out and be free.
Yeah, sure. You could go out then and be at the mercy of another tribe, of another clan that may not recognize you, that may not want you around. You're dead within, God knows how many days of leaving your clan and your tribe and going out to strike it out in the world and become it was an ugly and it was a dog-eat-dog world. Still is a dog-eat-dog world. There's no question about it. But there isn't a human being listening to this radio show tonight that wouldn't have something to say about the fact that during a recession, if they were walking down the street, they saw a dead body in the street from starvation. And it would be more than just, hey, where's the garbage man?
Yeah, where's the trash pickup?
Yeah, that's real funny, man.
That's disgusting.
It happened. I don't care how conservative people are, and I don't give a damn how much into Ayn Rand their ass is. If you're walking down the street and you see somebody who is starved to death, and I'm telling you, that was the case in America. During the various panics and recessions of the 19th century, someone dead in the street, and you're walking down there with your copy of Atlas Shrugged, and what are you going to do, just step over the body? I doubt it. I doubt it. So,
Well, so you agree with the fact that Ayn Rand was in essence... Well, I'm trying to indict her.
Yeah, okay. So let's take a... Oh, by the way, a freshly enhanced Powerball jackpot now at least 500 million is driving surging sales ahead of Wednesday night. Oh, we have to break. I was reading something from last night. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Dead, go ahead, step over a dead body.
What?
You, at least you don't have to step over a dead body.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, I just think it's overworked.
Well, I mean, I've got here the... and Margaret Gray, you have the information. Go ahead.
Apparently, according to this latest... Some of the informants that I have and people that I know and my sources inside the entertainment business, Charlie Sheen, as you probably have heard, but I know about this too, so I don't know.
Well, what do you...
Well, I know this, but... Someone else knows it, and so they reported it.
Yeah, it's not exclusive.
It was exclusive, and then it got reported.
Well, why aren't we reporting it when it's exclusive?
It was exclusive to me, meaning I knew it, but then other people all... But in my world, I knew it. I don't know, Phil. Let me just...
What is that supposed to mean?
Let me just read this. Charlie Sheen says that the recent outburst by Angus T. Young, one of the other stars of Two and a Half Men, is a sign that the show is a hive of oppression. Now, Angus Young, the young actor on Two and a Half Men, had said something to the effect of, don't watch this show, it's filth, it's pornography, it is absolute, it's a symbol of the Jewish oppression of Christians.
No, he didn't say that.
Well, it's something like that. And then he said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm only kidding. Now, that's something that Phil Hendry has done quite a bit, and he gets away with it. But on this show, you don't get away with something like that. Well, it caused quite a media storm, and then Charlie Sheen weighed in. I had a call from one of my sources yesterday morning that Charlie Sheen was about to weigh in on this, and I had the exclusive, but then I found out he'd already weighed in on it 2 days before. So that doesn't make sense to you, does it?
Oh, it doesn't make any sense.
Are you listening to me? I had the exclusive.
You had the exclusive, but it came in with 2 days before. What's that mean?
That he said it at 2 days before.
And no one knew about it.
No, everyone knew about it. Never mind. You know, it's one thing to talk to idiots. It's another thing to talk to you people.
You know what? You can call me an idiot, Mark, but nothing you said made any sense.
You said it, that...
Don't tell me what I said. I am a seasoned entertainment reporter, and...
I don't like it when you're hitting me in the chest with your finger.
Well, just... You... I'm a seasoned reporter.
Ow!
What a baby.
Going to the toilet again.
No, I'm going out to my car to get... I need to get something. I've got to get another tampon.
Oh, jeez.
The ones I brought are not absorbent.
What is she? I mean...
She's on a one-month period.
All right, enough out of you. Charlie Sheen, it's high time that Charlie Sheen weigh in on the latest scandal surrounding the former hit show Two and a Half Men. I don't like her pointing at me. That hurt. But as much as the media has pointed a damning finger at young actor Angus T. Jones for this recent outburst, where he did say something like, don't watch the show, it's filth, he did, then he said it was he was kidding. Sheen says the real person to blame for the emotional tsunami is show creator Chuck Lorre, with whom he's had more than a few verbal tussles. Obviously, not having been there for some time, the Angus T. Jones that I knew and still love is not the same guy I saw on YouTube yesterday. I dare anyone to spend 10 years in the laugh track that is Chuck Lorre's hive of oppression and not suffer some kind of emotional tsunami. On Monday, Jones caused a major media buzz when a taped interview of him bashing his money-making sitcom was released online. If you watch Two and a Half Men, please stop watching Two and a Half Men. I'm on Two and a Half Men, and I don't want to be on it, the 19-year-old actor said in the video rant. Please stop watching it and filling your head with filth. Despite behind-the-scenes turmoil of the past few years, Two and a Half Men has long been one of the top-rated sitcoms on TV. I apologize if my remarks reflect me showing indifference to and disrespect of my colleagues and a lack of appreciation for the extraordinary opportunity I have, he said. I never intended that. I don't know if that's an apology, but the world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. And, of course, we're online at philhendryshow.com for all of your Phil Hendry Show needs. Please do join us there at philhendryshow.com with a backstage pass. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing to have because it enables you to access all of that marvelous video as well as audio as well as media. We'll see you guys tonight at 10 o'clock. And until then, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.